You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday. It's David Shapiro. So it's Shapiro World. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And he's going to look through the market that's gone on today and over the previous few days in his own inimitable fashion. David, I want to talk about Eskom quickly. So you're obviously online and nobody I've spoken to today has said that there has been any load shedding. And there's a conspiracy theory going around. I heard about it last week. It's been in the newspapers this weekend. Can you clear up what it is, first of all, and whether you give any credence to the claims?
We don't really know. What's interesting is last week we were in panic situation, phase four cuts, load shedding every couple of hours, and this week nothing. And over the weekend, as you mentioned in the newspapers, there was a belief that this is all done to discredit Ramaphosa's plan to break up Eskom into three different businesses. So we're just sitting here trying to work out what this all means and who these forces are. You know, Lindsay, it was very interesting that in Parliament, Dean Hazen, who is the chief whip of the DA, made a speech last week in which he said, you know, he was attacking Cyril Ramaphosa's State of the Nation address. And in it, he said, you know, you've said, watch the space. He says, and he said to Cyril Ramaphosa, he says, don't watch the space, watch your back, because it's your own party that is sabotaging your efforts, not the opposition, but within your own party, suggesting that it's Casata, the various trade unions, and various other interested parties that were creating all the problems. And there might be an element of truth. No one really knows what this all means. Whatever it is, we still owe 650 billion, whatever, you know, or 450 billion. I can't remember the number now that Eskom owes. They're still short in terms of revenue. The economy is still not growing. We're not going to get rid of that. Of course, load shedding would have only added to South Africa's woes. So I don't think it removes the problem. It just removes the infighting within an ANC government, which no one knows, you know, what their policies are, where they want to head.
I do think, I mean, I don't know anything about running a power utility, but if you watch The Simpsons, you'll see Homer Simpson sitting in the Springfield nuclear plant owned by the famous Montgomery Burns, and he's there on his own. He could just press the wrong button and the thing could go off. I don't know that just a couple of agitators could really bring down the national grid. Maybe there are more than a few agitators, and maybe there was a concerted effort. You never know.
Well, it seems like that. You know, it seems that there could be parties within Eskom that said, well, if you want to break it up, we're going to show you. You know, this could be people fiddling around or creating problems. There's absolutely no reason why that can't happen. So you're right. You know, I love Mr. Burns. He always reminds me of Wilbur Ross. Wilbur Ross reminds me of him, you know, Secretary of the Treasury. No, what's it? Commerce Secretary in the U.S.
Does look a bit like him, doesn't he?
Yeah, acts like him as well. Evil little man.
Anyway, let's move on from The Simpsons now to a set of results that came out this morning. And I want to use this also as a tutorial, not a tutorial on the results, but on the terminology used in the results. The company concerned is Anglo American Platinum, and it says it announces another strong financial and operational performance. So if we could combine cursory analysis of the numbers along with a bit of a tutorial, if we can. It says continued industry leading returns to shareholders, generating 55% total shareholder return. What does that mean?
Total shareholder return must be on the equity capital. In other words, on the equity part of the balance sheet. So, in other words, their profits as a percentage of equity would have been that kind of amount in a shareholder return. Alternatively, it could be, you know, I'm not quite sure of the phraseology. Alternatively, it could be that the share price was up by that amount over the year. You know, that could be a more likely number, because they don't normally, shareholder returns the return on the capital that they employ or on equity would be a much lower level. So I think what they might be referring to there is that the gain in the price over the last year, because it was by far the best performing share on the JSE over the last year. So if I look on a 12-month point of view, in fact, Anglo American over the last year, strangely enough, the share price is up from where we talk today You know, remember there was that drop in February up 103%. So it gives you an idea of the gains that we've seen in the share price. So I hope I've given the right explanation on that one.
Yeah, I think you have.
But I think the share price was higher. But normally one measures the effectiveness or the efficacy of a, you know, of a company on capital. In other words, what capital did they employ? In other words, a mixture of loans and of shareholder equity in order to make the profits that they did. That's how you measure the efficacy of management.
Well, let's go straight on to capital employed then, because return on capital employed, or ROCE, increased to 24%. Again, briefly explain that. What does that mean?
Well, you see, what they use is they use capital employed would be equity capital. In other words, that's share capital plus reserves, and it also includes long-term debt. In other words, money that you have borrowed for the purpose of earning, you know, of earning profits on. Not short-term debt, which is creditors and, you know, which you use to purchase goods and so on. That's short-term capital, or people that you owe, you know, for fixing the lorries and so on. So capital employed would be long-term capital, but they also use EBIT, in other words, earnings before interest and tax. So they use the operating profit, not the profit after tax, not the bottom line. They use what's called EBIT or EBITDA in order to calculate that. So that's what they mean by return on capital.
Moving on to EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization, it achieved a growth of 21% to 14.5 billion. Now, I know that someone like Warren Buffett would say, why on earth do you want to, what is EBITDA?
Exactly right.
Why exactly on earth do you use this measure? Can you explain that whole scenario as well?
You're dead right. I'm also not a great EBITDA person. What they try and do is they try and look in the operating part of the company. But where Buffett is right, so EBITDA, as you correctly mentioned, was earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. Now, for me, interest is very much part of the operating part of a business. And also depreciation is a write-off of previously invested capital. In other words, you buy a machine and you write it off. So down the line, you're actually going to have to find that kind of money to replace the machine. So I hope I'm not getting too complicated, but in a way, I agree with Buffett or Charlie Munger's view of EBITDA, that it's not a correct measure. In other words, you're excluding a lot of expenses, which are real expenses of a business. Maybe tax could be different because the rates are different, but I mean, certainly interest and depreciation are, in my view, are very important expenses in which to consider.
Now, here's something as well that is always, one of the first two items in the key features of a stock exchange news service announcement of a company's results. Headline earnings per share increased by 95% to 28.93 per share. And once you've explained that, then you can give me the distinction between headline earnings per share and basic earnings per share. So headline earnings per share first, please.
Yeah. Well, headline earnings, what you do is you exclude one-off items, which I disagree with as well. In other words, it's trying to give you the sustainable profits of a company, whereas basic earnings would be affected by sometimes one-off events. In other words, if they sold a mine and made a loss on it, it's a one-off event that would come into the basic earnings side. Or if there were, I'm trying to think of other issues like that, if the dam burst or something like this and they had to do something of an exceptional nature, that would not form part of headline earnings. But in many cases, once more, these kind of expenses are very much part, you know, of ongoing issues that a company faces. So in America, there are no such descriptions in that. It's very much a South African type definition, and it tells you absolutely nothing because you can manipulate this to whatever number you want. So that's what headline earnings means. It's trying to determine the sustainable profits that came out of the operations, you know what I mean, without being affected by one-off events.
Okay, and finally,
it's not a good, you know, if people don't understand it, I understand what they're saying. It's not a good measure. understand the business and some of those issues that, you know, because in a mine, many of the one-off issues are actually happen every year.
Here's one. Free cash flow from operations increased by 60% to 5.6 billion. I distinctly remember when Srinivasan Venkatakrishnan became the CEO of Anglo Gold Ashanti, having been CFO before. When I used to interview him, one of the first things he would say, if it had been a good quarter or a good half year, whatever it was, he would say, "We've generated more free cash flow." And he set great store by this measure. What is it?
Well, you see what happens. That ignores non-cash items that you might be putting through the balance sheet. So this shows you, this is the cash book, the cash that came in and the cash went out and what's left. But it's a very important measure of how businesses are doing. But once more, it can be distorted by not spending, you know, by not spending on capital items and not spending on other items. How you measure the real success of a business is you look at the cash flow and you look at what's left in the cash flow. But this is what's left in the cash flow after paying out dividends and also after setting aside money and or real money to actually invest in the sustainability of a company. In other words, that's how you'll measure a good company. What, you know, companies have to keep reinvesting in their own operations. And what you look for in cash flow is what did they reinvest, you know, to keep the business going on the long term. So I'm saying free cash flow can sometimes be misleading because it doesn't necessarily include those items. And there are various definitions of what free cash flow is. But that's how you look at it. You know, that's how you would look at a business. What cash did they generate? What did they pay in dividends? What was left to reinvest in the business? What did they reinvest in business? And what cash have they got left after that?
You know? Okay. So that's the free cash.
Sorry, I have, yeah.
No,
well,
good.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Anyway, let's say the results themselves. We expect this series of strategic actions. This is in the summary statement, which you always taught me to read first. We expect this series of strategic actions to increase cash flows and returns and reinforce the sustainability of the company for the benefit of all our stakeholders. Mm. Lest we forget, David Shapiro, this share was just below 70 Rand a share, not that long ago. And it's now, what is it now, 700?
Yeah, it's Anglo-Platts are 702.
It's been a 10-bagger. Right. It's incredible.
It has been. But what you have to understand, and this is where we go wrong on the radio, in the media, what do? We quote the platinum price.
Yeah.
Now, let me give you some numbers as well.
PGM. You're going to tell me about the basket, aren't you? You're going to tell me about the basket.
See, what's interesting about the basket that we don't understand, so platinum price is actually in a bear market. In 2014, it was 1306. It's now 871. But that made up 39% of the basket. Okay, so in other words, they were only earning 39%. Palladium went from 2014 from 803 to 1029. That makes up 30% of the basket. Now, that we've forgotten because last year it's gone up almost 30-40% in the last year, maybe even more. We've forgotten about palladium. That's where they made the money, and that's how they were able to turn it around. Secondly, if you look at rhodium, which is 12.5%, that's gone from 1,150 to 2,200. So they've made their money on palladium and rhodium, which made up like almost 42-43% of the basket, as opposed to platinum, which only made up 39%. So the big gains were made there. And of course, we've also had a rand, which over the last few years has been a bit wonky, helping them as well. And then thirdly, great management. They got rid of, you know, Chris Griffiths got rid of all the non-operations that were causing them losses, took some very vast action, sold off what they didn't need, and have just stuck with the better mines, low-cost mines, particularly the open-pit mines. So, you know, good management and credit not only to Chris Griffiths, but also to Mark Cutifani as well.
Yes. Yes, Mark Cutifani has been, he's been quietly going about his business. And he's done well for the parent company and all its associates as well. Impala Platinum, while we're with Platinum, has come out with its second recent trading statement. This is a further trading statement for the 6 months ended December. Before, it said the basic earnings per share for the period would be 292 cents per share, and the JSE requires you to give a range within within two numbers. It's going to be either this or that. They didn't have that information at their fingertips at the time. Now they have. So instead of 292 cents per share, they're saying that it's going to be between, where is it? 308 and 312 cents per share. So yeah, it just gets better.
Yeah. And for the very same reason, Impala are still undergoing quite extensive moves, you know, to streamline their operation. But they've also been helped dramatically by the swings in the PGM basket. So, you know, it's no longer useful for us just to quote the platinum price. We have to understand, you know, what the mines are earning from these other metals as well, which are in really in very, very positive territory. So I think that's the answer, and that gives the explanation as to why we're able to, why they're able to produce these kind of numbers.
And look what.
But you know, when you look at a mine, I think again, what you have to look at is what they're reinvesting to ensure future platinum production, and that's the answer to the sustainability of these businesses. You know, how long the operations. In fact, for Anglos, I think there are two mines. I know Amanda Bilt and Magalawena, I think it is. Those are the two major operations as well. And you've got to work out what the sustainable life of those are. In many cases, they are, you know, mines are not that long life. These are not 30, 40 years. I don't know these two in particular, but that's how you look at a mine in terms of where they're going to be and, you know, what the sustainability of these mines are.
Okay.
It's a very complex investment area, mining, because it's depreciating. Once you draw the platinum out, you never replace it. So you've got to keep looking, like oil. It's a very similar situation. So you've got to look at what the life of the mines are, and how long they're going to last, and how long you can mine at these kind of levels, etc., in order to work out the valuations of the operations.
David, as we speak, with half an hour to go till the JSE closes, Impala Platinum up just over 4%, doing very well indeed. The other big move is to the upside, Sibanye, Goldfields, Resilient, and CML. And on the downside, Telkom, Old Mutual, Brait, Pioneer Foods, and Bidcorp. So the resources stock's going well again. And I've looked at resources chart. I mean, I know you look at a chart.
Yeah.
It's been doing so well, and it looks as though it can go further.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of upward momentum. I'm not the greatest bull on commodities simply because they are so difficult to understand and so volatile. But there seems to be a lot of momentum behind commodities. That's also because of management like Griffiths and Kutafani, who've fine-tuned operations and now starting to generate cash. We also had the stimulus coming out of China this morning, allowing credit, whether that's going to translate into more purchases of raw materials or whether it's going to be consumer goods, we don't know. But I mean, there's a little bit of an upward momentum drive in global markets. Equities are starting to move. And I think all of this just seems to be favoring commodities, which have gone through a very, very torrid time over the last few years. So thank goodness for that, because that's the big driver on the JSE. It's not the local economy. It's mainly been the miners that have given us the gains that we've had this year.
Now, overseas markets now, some trade talk optimism between China and the United States propelled the US market to a really, really good end of the week close. I mean, I'm looking at the S&P now. S&P futures are 27.
It's close, eh?
Yeah, because of the President's Day holiday, but the futures are open. It's 27.76. That was 24.36, 24.37 at one point. A 300-point move in almost record time for the S&P. And one thing you never usually get, we were talking about charts, you very rarely get a V-shaped recovery. In other words, you get a plunge in the price of a security or an index, which we saw in December. And it usually sort of has to consolidate and lick its wounds and then gradually come back to the old level. Mm. It's gone straight back to form the V that I've been talking about.
Yeah.
It's very, very unusual, David Shapiro.
It is. You know why? Because I think that was an unusual movement around about Christmas time in 2018. No one's quite sure why the market took fright. We were pretty steady until then, forming a base, and suddenly the trapdoor opened. A lot had to do with worries about government shut down. A lot had to do with the trade worries and the talk coming out of Trump. There was still Brexit. There were a lot of things that were weighing on investors' minds, which to a large extent have been addressed. I still, you know, Lindsay, I'm the bull of bulls, but I still, at the back of my mind, I worry about Trump. You never know what's going to come out of
him.
You
know,
you know what I mean? When it comes to trade talks, where they can say progress one day, who knows where it's going to go? You know, and the same thing as we saw him with declaring a national emergency and that. So at the back of my mind, you know, the Chinese story, the trade talks, all of these things are always, you know what I mean? I've always got one eye on the exit door. In other words, if I have to pull the trigger, I will.
David, I'm looking forward to the Champions League this week. I think Lyon against Barcelona, Liverpool playing Bayern Munich. That's quite a good one, because the FA Cup is fine, and that's the reason there was no English Premier League this weekend. But it's not quite the same thing as the league, is it, these days? It used to be, but not anymore.
No, it was pretty boring stuff. Yeah, a couple of matches for the lesser clubs. I mean, they battle it out. It's a big day for them, but there are no real big games. Tonight's Chelsea, Man United. I'm not sure where that's going to end, but I'm with you in that respect. I think Champions League just has a much better feel for them, and there's great soccer there. You know, there's always great soccer. So, yeah, we've got something to look forward to.
Yes, we have, David. And we'll have something to look forward to next time we speak as well. That was David Shapiro, and that was Shapiro World.